When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness, for there is a kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when your people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt loses its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but it is thrown out and trampled under feet."
Good evening. First, let me just thank Pastor Christie, Reverend Christie, for hosting this event, and for to all of you here at this church and for the Forum of Churches, thank you for hosting and welcoming me as I join this community. I really do love reading. So I'm going to share a few quotes with you today throughout this little homily. The first quote is from a book called The Gargoyle by Andrew Davidson. It has some adult themes. I'm not promoting it. I love novels. I love anything I can get my hands on. It's a difficult story. But in it, at one point, the main character has found a bit of a conversion, not necessarily to God, but to goodness. And he mentions in the book that he frequently sees the priest across the street working in his yard. And then he says these words, "I've decided not to dislike him, despite the fact that he's a priest." I hope, it's my hope, that you can say the same about my presence in your community after I speak tonight. Secondly, I simply want to recognize the primary theme of this day, Thanksgiving. I, like all of you, am thankful for so much. You know, of course, there's the quote-unquote usual things. They're not so usual. Family, church, God, food, shelter. I'm thankful for all of that. I'm thankful that such a wonderful group such as the Forum of Churches exists and is present in this community with all of the members of each church to meet the needs of God's people. That is so uplifting. I'm thankful for the past liturgical year and the opportunity to move to Huntington and minister in this community at Most Holy Trinity. I'm thankful for the coming Advent. And I'm thankful especially that during this coming season, which I always consider Thanksgiving the beginning of, that we will see one of my favorite titles of Christ many, many times. And that is the Prince of peace. In the next few months, we will probably see the word peace more than the rest of the year, the rest of the decade combined. Peace. Peace on earth. Goodwill to men. Let there be peace on earth. The Prince of Peace is born. And so for this reason, I wanted to focus my reflection today on peace. Thankful for the relative peace in which we live. And hoping that the Advent season will be one of ushering the Prince of Peace back into the forefront of our minds, hearts, and lives. That is why I chose the Beatitudes for our reading today. I'm sure many of you noticed over the course of hearing it again and again and again, I'm sure we've all heard the Beatitudes many times, that many of the Beatitudes are things that you are, not things that you necessarily do. Blessed are the poor in spirit, the meek, the clean of heart. Blessed are those who mourn. All may have some outward manifestations, but they are tend to be more what we are rather than what we do. Only a few describe action. Blessed are the merciful, for instance. You know, if you're merciful, that implies right in the title, doing something, showing mercy to someone outside of yourself. And especially tonight, I would like us to ask about, to ponder, blessed are the peacemakers. And while not many people would cite peace as a priority or need in their lives, I think that a simple look around our country and our world would state that that is exactly what we need this Thanksgiving, this coming year. We need the Prince of Peace this year as much as any before. We need peacemakers as much as any time before. Now, let me say before I give a few examples that I realize I'm preaching to the choir. I realize that if you're here, you're already following in the footsteps of Christ. And I'm humbled that you would let me lead you in a reflection. Thank you for that. And so now I ask the question, how can we, as a Christian family, be peacemakers? Peacemakers, it implies action, it implies doing, it implies something outside of ourselves. Though I believe the first question we should ask is, how can we be peacemakers in ourselves? The second quote I'll share is from a book called My Name is Memory by Anne Brashares. It's a book about a narrator who's writing down his life's experiences. And he happens to be one of those souls that can reincarnate. I'm not saying that that is good theology. Not saying it's not, in case you believe that. But I'm not saying it's good theology, but it does make for a great story. And the narrator, who is never named, I don't believe, is early in his writings, writing out his first rememberable life. And he was a soldier, a mercenary for hire. And he remembered how kind of bloodthirsty he was at that time, ready for a fight. And he asked himself, right in the accounting of this life, why he was that way. And this is the quote from the book. He says, "The fervency itself was the cause. Just as blindly as I believed in the rightness of my side, I believed in the black heart of my enemy. This is a characteristic of a very young soul, and evidence, though not proof, that it really was my first life. It would be an atrocity to have stayed that stupid." It took him a while to realize that he needed internal peace. He couldn't look at everything as right and wrong, black and white. He needed to look inside his soul, find something greater. And then everything became enlightened as it should. It took him a while to be a peaceful soul, to bring peace to his soul. And so my first question is, how can we be peacemakers in our own souls? And again, I realize everyone here is already trying to do this. But I think the first thing that can bring peace to our souls is thankfulness. The first primary theme of the night. Thankfulness connects us to those whom we are thankful for having given us gifts. God, family, friends. And so thankfulness connects us in a way that allows us internally to say, you know what? There is a network of caring. There is a body of Christ that I am part of. And that can bring us some great peace. Can we also be compassionate in our dialogue with ourselves? You know, Catholic guilt is a real thing. I don't know if it affects other faith traditions. You know, but it can be so easy to see the sinner inside and not see the redeemed. Can we recognize our giftedness and be thankful for it? Rejoice in God's forgiveness rather than lamenting that he had to extend it. And can we continue to find prayer and community and hobbies that nourish and increase our deep, internal, foundational peace in Christ Jesus? Like I said, I don't look at the news, I don't look out at the world and see many people who seem, I can't judge, I don't know, but seem to have an internal peace with which they engage the world. And so can we be peacemakers in ourselves? Secondly, can we be peacemakers in our community? In our community. Now, as a Catholic here, I'll get my one Catholic quote in, you know. This is a quote from USA Today. Not always the finest literature, but a good news source, you know. And they quoted Pope Francis in a homily that he gave this week. And Pope Francis said, and I'm quoting from the USA Today article, but it starts with Pope Francis's words. We live in a time in which polarization and exclusion are burgeoning and considered the only way to resolve conflicts, says the Pope. We see, for example, how quickly those among us with the status of a stranger, an immigrant, or a refugee become a threat, take on the status of an enemy because they come from a distant country or have different customs. An enemy because of the color of their skin, their language, or their social class. An enemy because they think differently or even have a different faith. This animosity gradually turns to outright hostility and violence, he said. And he notes that this is happening even among clergy and at meetings within his own church. And many of the news outlets immediately tried to spin this for a specific aim, you know, pro-immigrant, pro-refugee. I think it was all of that. But it was even more. He said even people who think differently, we're treating them as if they are an enemy. And it's tearing our communities apart. In an election year, in this election year, it's hard not to see what he was talking about. Violence in word becomes violence indeed. Violence then becomes then because of the other's words. Violence because of what separates us. Violence because so different, because of different value systems and viewpoints. Sometimes the violence is actually physical. Many of the times it's verbal. But it is violence. There are so many voices of division and violence. And I would say, can we as Christians once again find a voice of peace? Again, I'm speaking to the choir, but the world needs to see us. Can we be a voice of peace by not judging others' relationship with God? If he was patient with me, I have to let him be patient with others. By recognizing that intelligent people can have reasonably different views on even important issues. By celebrating what unites us rather than what divides us. This is assembly, is the very epitome of that. Can we refuse to use the words that have become so common in our society to label others as something evil? There's about 5 or 6 of them that you cannot read an article today and not see them. I don't even need to speak them. And that's sad that they're being so used that I don't even have to say what they are. Can we, while recognizing our own sinfulness, continue to do as Jesus did and sit with those whom society considers sinners, meet their needs, listen to their stories, hear their pain, often before we even preach a word to them? Jesus did that. Can we continue to? And can we empathize with those we do not agree with? Not sympathize. Sympathize means, I know what you mean, I agree. Sympathy. But empathize. Be able to say, you know, I disagree with you, but I can see where you're coming from. It's so, so important to have some people taking this presence of peace, this voice of peace, to our community and our world. And that leads me to my last question. Can we be peacemakers in the world? The last quote I'll use is from Ender's Game, a futuristic novel by Orson Scott Card. Some of you may have seen the movie version a year or two ago. In the book, a child named Ender Wiggin is drafted into the military to see if he has the talent to lead a military expedition to destroy this enemy that had attacked Earth. He's put through vigorous and sometimes violent training, and he surpasses all expectations, winning every battle of mind, heart, leadership, and strength. In the midst of this, another one of the characters in the book, one of Ender's friends, notices that he is absolutely miserable and asks him why. You know, he looks at him and he says, "You're doing so well. Any of us would be ecstatic to be doing what you're doing." And Ender responds, and this is the quote from the book, "In the moment when I truly understand my enemy, understand him well enough to defeat him, then in that very moment, I also love him. I think it's impossible to really understand somebody, what they want, what they believe, and not love them the way they love themselves. In that very moment, I love them." What others saw is a string of successes for Ender, he experienced as a living torture, because he was talented enough to see so fully who they were that he would know what they would do and could respond before they acted. It was that skill that made him able to defeat his enemies in every test. It was that very same skill that made every victory feel like he was destroying a loved one. What a powerful way to say, "But for the grace of God, so goeth I." I know this person so well that even though I disagree with them, I can see that I would be in their position if I had grown up in their place. And so in a world torn by perpetual war and violence, can we find some way to proclaim Christ's peace? Yes, there are bad people out in the world. Yes, I believe that sometimes a just response to their actions is some forceful response. But almost every Christian theology only justifies violence, you know, just war theory, something like that, if there is a pathway to peace also articulated. If we're not just saying we need to do this, but also if we do this and this and this, we can bring peace. Can we look out at the world with eyes of peace again? Christians throughout history have been the primary agitators for peace. Can we continue to do that? Continue to bring aid to those in need, bridging theologies and cultures by continuing to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, visit the sick and imprisoned. Bring them peace. Continue to help those displaced by violence. Millions and millions now. Continue to question war and its methods, not to condemn any individuals, but to make sure that we are being as moral as possible, as restrained as possible. There are so many discussions that could happen that won't, because there aren't voices of peace that are loud enough to make the argument happen. Can we recognize that violence begets violence? Can we learn about the faith and traditions of those around the world, even those who are opposing us? Can we refuse to label everyone as simply, and here's another one of those touch words, terrorist? You know, there are some out there, don't get me wrong, but it's become a phrase that's meaningless because we use it so much, and try to understand what the people of the world are doing and why they are doing it. Again, not to be converted to their side, but to understand, and through understanding, possibly see common ground on which peace can be built. When I keep hearing over and over again, well, that group can't be, they won't even talk. That group, you can't reach them. I say nothing is impossible with God. Can we continue to be voices of dialogue without using a vocabulary of violence? Can we make the Prince of Peace known in the world by being his hands and feet, by being peacemakers? One of my spiritual directors in seminary once told me that you should never pray for anything that you are not willing to work for as well. He said, don't pray for the poor unless you're open to helping them, for example. Today I would amend that slightly and ask us to not pray to Christ under a title that we are not willing to help bring about. Let us not cry out to the Prince of Peace this Advent without also asking this Thanksgiving and throughout this Advent how we can be peacemakers in ourselves, in our communities, in a world that needs it so desperately. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. Thank you for all that you do in this community to serve the people of God. As I said before, it is a profoundly uplifting thing to see. May we all find many reasons to be thankful this Christmas, and may God bring us all strength in our faith, an increase of hope, and a world of ever-growing peace this coming Advent and in the new year. Thank you.